Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the campus of Texas A&M in College Station, Texas. There we go. Now you can hear me. Live from the campus of Texas A&M in College Station, Texas. This is the first debate for the 2020 presidential election. I'm your host, Adam Preston. This is for the game Capitol Hill, which is a free government simulation. Come check us out at tettervision.com/Capitol Hill. President Kyle Fitzgerald seems to have closed the gap with his Democratic opponent, Senator John Onyers Jackson of Maryland. The polls show that this race is neck and neck, so the stakes tonight could not be higher. As negotiated by the candidates themselves, this first debate will be on domestic issues, with questions of my choosing asked by the voters themselves. There are not strict time restraints on the candidates, but gentlemen, please keep your answers concise, as we'll have only 30 minutes here tonight. Let's begin with no more than 60 seconds to each candidate for an opening statement. Mr. President, we'll turn to you first.
Thank you, Adam. It's great to be back here in Aggieland tonight. First of all, I want to offer my thoughts and prayers to everyone potentially in the path of Hurricane Felix. I have already signed a disaster declaration that is mobilizing federal resources towards affected areas. Help is on the way, and we are ready. As for the debate tonight, the focus will be on domestic policies here at home. It's fitting because that's where the focus of this administration has been the last 4 years. After years of spending trillions of dollars to build other nations, we decided to start building our own, and the results speak for themselves. Tax cuts, fair trade, and massive infrastructure investment has rebuilt our country and produced a booming economy. Americans today have better job opportunities, more money in their pockets, and loved ones who have returned home from foreign wars. Tonight, America is truly on the cusp of a Pax Americana, an unrivaled period of peace and prosperity for our country.
Thank you. Senator Jackson, 60 seconds to you.
Good evening, everyone. I am so happy to be here in the great state of Texas, here on the beautiful campus of Texas A&M. First, I would like to thank Adam Preston for hosting us tonight. I'm excited to debate with President Fitzgerald. I commend him for stepping up in a great time of trouble that no vice president hopes to be called upon. So I commend him for doing that. However, I think that it's time for a change. He has remarked about several so-called accomplishments, and tonight we'll kind of unravel some of those. And America is ready for a president who actually will be fighting for them both at home and abroad to make sure that we are as strong and as influential as we have ever been. Thank you.
Thank you. And by virtue of a coin flip, the first question tonight will be going to the president. Mr. President, Thomas in Herman, Minnesota asks, do social networking sites have a responsibility to prevent the spreading of fake news and trolling?
I think they do, but we have to be very careful about that because, you know, this could be a slippery slope. First of all, we have to ask ourselves, what is fake news and what is trolling? I mean, are we going to start shutting down websites like The Onion or Clickhole that, you know, just publish parodies of the news? But, you know, somebody could say, well, that's fake news, that's trolling. So I would say yes. Certainly it's not the government's role to shut down free speech. And, you know, ultimately, I think that is up to the social networking platform, you know, to police their own platform as they personally see fit. But, you know, I think it is something we have to be careful with.
Thank you. Senator Jackson, do you have any response to that?
I can't say that my response is that far off from the president. I am also a very strong believer in the First Amendment. However, just like we don't want folks screaming fire in a crowded theater without there being an actual fire, we must also be wary of giving social networks free rein to police themselves. We've already seen that they don't do a very good job of that. So I'm not saying that the solution is the government stepping in and taking control, but I do think we need to hold them accountable for self-policing, just like we do for many other industries.
Mr. President, any comment on this before we move on?
No.
Excellent. It's nice to see, you know, when we can start with some agreement, even if it is. All right, so the next question is going to Senator Jackson. Senator Rachel in New York City asks, can you deny that President Fitzgerald has helped to grow the economy?
I think President Fitzgerald has done a decent job of stepping out of the way so that Obama-era economic growth could continue. We know that when President Obama was leaving office, the economy was already going back up. Jobs were having higher salaries than before. Unemployment was going lower. It was really a job seekers market out there. So I don't think President Fitzgerald has done too much to actually impact the economy other than, you know, avoiding a complete and total meltdown, which I think is a pretty low bar to ask of a president.
Mr. President, go ahead.
Well, I totally disagree that President Obama just kind of, you know, set the table for Donald Trump and myself. I mean, you look at some of the things that Obama was doing, you know, TPP, he tried to get us into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That would have been an absolute disaster. We got out of that very quickly. You look at all the regulations that Obama imposed that really stifled, you know, different American industries, especially energy production. You know, our first year in office, Donald Trump and I unraveled a lot of those regulations so that American businesses could produce again. And there are three planks that I talked about in my opening statement that this administration has accomplished the last 4 years. First of all, the tax cuts of 2017 cut taxes for individuals and businesses, made us more competitive in the global economy. Number two, the fair trade legislation that we passed that allows us to you know, go after currency manipulators, you know, taxes, outsource goods coming back into the country so that multinational corporations can't just, you know, shut down a factory in Indiana, move it to Mexico, and then try to, you know, get around us and undercut American manufacturers here at home. And then number three, infrastructure. You know, we've spent a massive investment in infrastructure, you know, to rebuild roads and bridges and hospitals and schools, and that's created a lot of good jobs. Senator, President Obama didn't do any of those things, except for infrastructure. He did do infrastructure, but that was over 10 years ago, and we were overdue for another one. But he did nothing to protect American trade and American jobs here at home, and he did absolutely nothing to cut taxes. When Donald Trump and I took office 4 years ago, our corporate tax rate was among the highest in the world, and now we've got it to a level that is more competitive with the rest of the world. So, I don't think – obviously, Obama was not – I don't think that Obama was a socialist. I don't think he did devastating damage to the economy. But you can't just sit there and give him all the credit, you know, for the tremendous success that we're enjoying right now. That's just not fair, and it's not accurate.
Oh, I am not giving him all the credit. As I said, President Fitzgerald, you have not screwed things up. So congrats on that. I do think President Obama did a great job of increasing America's influence on the international world stage, which allows us to have more influence and more leadership around the world, which ultimately helps us both economically and politically as we move forward in a more globally connected society than we've ever been in before. And last I checked, the infrastructure that has gone up and around was actually a bipartisan bill that I helped support and get through the Senate. So, yes, we all did that together. We all came together to do that thanks to leadership in the Senate. I would not give that credit to you just because you were able to be there to sign the bill. And finally, tax cuts, so a nation, a government is funded either by taxing the people or by taxing corporations. Yes, the U.S. had one of the higher corporate tax rates, but we also had one of the lowest individual tax rates. With those set to expire in just a short amount of time, we're going to see that tax burden be shifted onto the middle and lower classes, and then what? They're going to have a bunch of people now having to pay more taxes than they did beforehand, now struggling to meet those needs as well as the needs of themselves and their families. So that tax bill, that disastrous GOP tax scam, as I think so many people are calling it, will actually come back and hurt us unless we can start right now to start to rectify some of those issues.
Mr. President, please. I'm sure you have a response to that.
Well, speaking of fake news, we just got a lot of it in Senator Jackson's response right there. When he talks about rectifying those issues, what he means is he's going to go back and reverse the tax cuts and raise taxes on working Americans. That's the liberal, that's the Democrat solution. That's what they always go to first, want to raise taxes. So when he talks about reversing tax cuts, he's talking about essentially raising your taxes. I think if you're sitting here watching this at home, you've got to ask yourself that why is the first thing Senator Jackson why did the first thing he did was reach out and try to give credit to somebody who hasn't been in the presidency in 4 years? I mean, that's the first thing he did. Well, it was because of Obama. Why is he doing that? It's because he and his party lack an agenda and solutions for the future. They don't have the solutions. And regarding the infrastructure bill, Senator, that came from the office of the president. That was introduced on behalf of the administration. It says that in the bill.
Senator Jackson, go ahead and wrap us up on this question.
Yes. These taxes, not on everyday working Americans, those are the ones that you and your administration will have supported having their taxes go back up once their tax cuts expire. I am supporting restoring our corporate tax rate to what it was so that our government can continue to function and provide for the common defense and provision of the people, which is what it's supposed to be doing. In terms of giving credit to President Obama, I like, the truth in history and giving credit where it's due. That's all of us doing. In terms of the Democratic Party not, quote-unquote, not having a vision, that can't be further from the truth. We have a vision for a prospering, influential America that both strengthens the everyday American, the middle class, the lower classes, even the upper class, some of the folks that run those small businesses and create jobs for everyone, making sure that we're as strong at home as we are abroad. And you and your administration have done very little to actually strengthen our footing abroad. We are not an island. We cannot survive trying to be completely inwardly focused. And I've not seen much from you or your administration and reaching out to other countries and strengthening those partnerships so that we can flourish and continue to go forward, again, as I said, in this more globally connected economy and world that we live in.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and move on to the next question, which is going to President Fitzgerald. It comes from Gabriel in Indianapolis, Indiana. He asks, should creationism be taught in public schools? Go ahead, sir.
This is ultimately a state and local issue. This is a decision that should be decided by state governments, local school boards, and local school districts. This is absolutely not a federal issue. Now, on principle, I believe that a compromise can be reached where it's taught in the context of liberal arts and not in the context of science. I think it can be taught in a class that teaches religion, you know, a liberal arts class that teaches religion. And I believe that teaching religion is all religions can be part of a broader liberal arts education. I do not believe it should be taught in a science class because it is not a belief that is grounded in science. It is grounded in spirituality and faith. So I think it's important to make that distinction. But in my administration, the White House will not be dictating the states and localities whether or not to teach creationism.
Senator Jackson, do you have any rebuttal of that?
Yes, I would like to speak to this issue. In this situation, I agree with the president. In theory, I agree that the White House should not be dictating this policy as a policy best left to the states. I think it's also a good time to highlight just the need of our education system. I would love for schools that offer religion and other classes that will fulfill a more liberal arts perspective of education, where they get some of the sciences and some of the math and some of the languages and some of the philosophies and some of the social sciences and all of that. The problem is most schools don't have the funding to do that, particularly in our inner cities and in our rural communities. So I would say, as president, I would make sure that we commit more money and more attention to schools most in need so they can have the funding to have these kind of wonderful programs so that students can not only get exposure to different ideas, but also learn how to really critically think for themselves so they can have all these different ideas and evaluate them for themselves and draw their own conclusions. So they're not just reliant upon the government to give them, oh, this is what you should believe, but they have the tools themselves to take in all that information and then come up with their own conclusion. And I think that is really the best solution to this fake news problem that we see that really sprung up with President Trump's election that hasn't really gone away that much.
Let's go ahead and just move on to the next question. I'm glad to see there's agreement there as well. This one comes from Katrina from Cataract, Wisconsin, going to Senator Jackson. Katrina asks, are you concerned about GMOs in our food? Go ahead.
This is a great question. I'm glad we can stay in the realm of science and science education. I think genetically modified organisms, which is what GMO stands for, it is a very contested issue, and it's something that I have full Food and Drug Administration, and I also believe that we can do more to ensure that the FDA has more power and authority to really adjudicate the claims being made by our farmers and agricultural scientists across the nation and even around the world as other countries try to sell goods here. So far, the scientific community has reached a consensus that GMOs don't really pose much of a risk. However, we need to continue testing and ensuring that as science continues to grow and develop and become bigger and more advanced, that the safety of our citizens is the number one concern, that we make sure that citizens are eating safe food, as well as having access to food that they can afford, healthy food that will keep them alive. That is the biggest concern when it comes to GMOs. Not only do we need to make sure they're safe going forward as new technologies are developed, we also need to make sure that food continues to be accessible for each and every American.
Thank you. Mr. President, any comment on that?
I largely agree with the senator on that. One thing I would add is that I believe that consumers have a right to know what is in their food. And this is ultimately something that I believe the free market should decide. Either consumers will want to purchase food with GMOs or they won't. You know, there are arguments for it, increased crop yields, in some nutritional claims, and there's certainly arguments against it. But ultimately, consumers should have a right to know what they're eating and should be able to make informed decisions.
Thank you. Senator Jackson, any final comment on that real quick? Just real quick.
I agree wholeheartedly. Consumers should have as much information as we have available. Hence, why we need to make sure the Food and Drug Administration is funded as much as possible so they can continue to test not just GMOs, but all food that is up for sale within our country and all pharmaceuticals and homeopathic solutions that are up for sale in our country.
Thank you. Mr. President, Jacqueline in Smyrna, Georgia asks, should felons who have completed their sentence be allowed to vote?
On principle, I think so. That's how we do it in Texas. And in all my years in the state legislature, I didn't try to change that. But, you know, again, this is a state issue. And states, in some states, that's not the case. And I think ultimately states should have the right to determine that on their own.
Senator Jackson, go ahead.
To a degree, it's a state issue, but there are criminals in federal prisons that we can still issue guidance concerning federal elections. I agree with President Fitzgerald, and in theory, I like the idea of people who have already paid their debt to society regaining the right to vote. Each state can determine what that can look like within their state because different crimes and different individuals have different circumstances. I think this is also a great time to really go back and say, if we don't want these people voting, why? And we have to look back at our penal system, at our justice system, and our prison system, and are we truly, truly helping these folks to better themselves and to heal and to avoid making the same mistakes that they did before to end up in the spot they ended up in, to make sure they don't make those same bad choices in the future once they leave the prison. And so I think this is a great opportunity to look at our prisons, our federal prisons, to inspire the states to look at their state prisons and the territories to look at their own prisons as well, to make sure that we are looking at developing our citizens who are in jail, who will be returning to part of society afterwards.
Senator, the next question, if we can sneak it in very quickly. It comes from Eric in Akron, Ohio. It's kind of in the same realm. He asks, isn't it time to decriminalize marijuana nationally? Go ahead, sir.
I am a strong believer in medical marijuana. That is something I've gone on the record as saying on multiple occasions. I think it can offer not only avenues for new entrepreneurs and new corporations and companies and businesses and small businesses and local economic growth as we have more access to more kinds of substances to help folks, but the medical properties of marijuana have been thoroughly tested and demonstrated. And I think it can actually go a long way to also helping our opiate problems because now folks will have a less addictive substance to use with pain management than something that's from heroin. Ultimately, while from the White House, I think I would give this guidance. I would say I would support this. Ultimately, I do believe it is a state issue. It is something the states, the district, the territory should have their own right to determine. And as individuals in that state vote, they can determine what they want for their state. That is what I would say in that regard.
Mr. President, do you want to respond for just a minute?
Sure. Our administration is open to rescheduling marijuana so that it can be utilized for medical research and medical purposes. I remain strongly opposed to decriminalization, obviously, on the federal level, and I would advise states not to decriminalize it at the state level. And the reasons for that are many. First of all, marijuana is much more dangerous than it is today than it was you know, with the, you know, the flower kids that took it at Woodstock, that was about 1% THC. The THC content today in marijuana is about 15 to 20%. So it's about 15 to 20% more potent than it was, you know, 50 years ago. Marijuana contains more than 400 known chemicals, including a lot of the same cancer-causing substances you find in tobacco. Marijuana users are 3 to 7 times more likely to have a car crash. It can cause IQ to drop up to 8 points if you start at a young age. And obviously it's a gateway drug. And, you know, that's something that's been argued over and over again. But the facts do not lie. Somebody who uses, a young person who uses marijuana, 85 times more likely to use cocaine, twice as likely to use it as somebody who uses alcohol, 4 times as likely to use coke as somebody who smokes cigarettes. So I'm very opposed to decriminalizing marijuana, but I think medically, look, we allow OxyContin to be prescribed for pain, and that's an extremely dangerous, I mean, that's almost like heroin. We prescribe all sorts of dangerous medications. So if there's some way we could figure out to use marijuana for medical purposes, I'm open to it. But as far as decriminalizing it for recreational use, that's a very bad idea.
Thank you. Senator Jackson, if you want like 30 seconds to wrap us up on this question.
Yes, I'm glad the president agrees with me on my stance on medical marijuana. We already have lots of research out there that shows its use for not just people struggling with cancer, but also helping veterans with PTSD. As far as the possibility of being open to rescheduling marijuana, I wholeheartedly agree with that plan to look at it and think that it may not need to be in the same category as heroin and ketamine and some of the other strong destructive drugs known to man.
Thank you. Thank you. And let's do 60 seconds for closing statements. President Fitzgerald, you're up first.
Thank you, Adam. 4 years ago, Donald Trump and I promised you that we would make America great again. We kept that promise. Tax cuts, fair trade, and substantial infrastructure investment has produced a booming economy. We have a budget that finally balances. Our borders are more secure than ever. Our immigration laws have been reformed and upgraded for the 21st century. And our men and women in uniform are returning home from Afghanistan with honor. Donald Trump and I made America great again, and for the next 4 years, I will keep our country on top.
Thank you. Senator Jackson, final word tonight.
I am one of those people that believe America was always great. And I think that the steps the current administration have taken have only harmed our standings in the world, and that ultimately will harm us because our world is going more interconnected. America cannot risk losing its stance as a leader among the nations, and with more of President Fitzgerald and his administration, we will. Simply put, we will. So we need a change. We need a president that will not only focus on making sure that every American has an opportunity to succeed and to grow and to develop, but we need to make sure that we have a president that will make sure America stays the influential leader on the world scale that it is today.
Thank you, Senator. And allow me to add my thanks as well to both of you for being here tonight and to answer and for answering some of the voters' questions. That does it for us here in Texas. I'm Adam Preston saying good night. We'll see you next time.